First of all, I want to disclose that I have no financial relationship or any conflict of interest from this project. The topic I chose for this presentation is named Intergenerational Association of Eating Behaviors. Really, it's correlations between adults and children's intakes who live in the same households. We do know that overall diet quality is really important for children's health. It promotes adequate growth and development, and there's some discussion as to how we define a good diet quality. I choose to address the dietary guidelines and the dietary reference intake, so my pyramid and EARs of the DRI, to say children who meet the recommendations of macronutrients, micronutrients, and the food groups are indeed the children who do have a high-quality diet. There's also the issue of total energy, and I will get into that a little bit later. Clearly, adequate energy is important for growth and development, but there's also the issue, as we very well know, about excessive energy intake. So what is the current status in diet quality in children? Most children have a fairly low quality of their diet. There's a very high prevalence of dining out. There's a very high prevalence of sweetened beverages intake. And if you had a chance to see the session in the that was just before this one on the sweetened beverages, you got plenty of evidence of what that means for children's health. But there's also low whole grains, fruits, and vegetables intake. So overall, there's a concern. There's a concern of children having diets that are not ideal to promote adequate growth and development. They're excessive in some things like added sugar and certain fats, but they're insufficient in other nutrients that are quite important. So it is a public health problem. I picked some issues here that I want to talk about for the parent-child transfer of eating behavior. There are some few studies out there that look at this directly. The studies tend to be small. They tend to be in very specific ethnic groups. But what we do see is that there seems to be a relationship between, for instance, fathers eating breakfast, which leads to children eating more fruits and vegetables, or mother's milk consumption and lower consumption of soda beverages or sweetened carbonated beverages is indeed also reflected by the girls in the of those mothers. Now, if you look at the very first point, quite frankly, I read the paper and I looked at this and I thought, I cannot make head and tails out of this. Why would fathers eating breakfast affect fruits and vegetable intake in children? The data was strong. I took a close look at the statistics. I was convinced that they did the right thing. Can I explain it? No, I can't. Maybe you can. And I'm very open to hearing it. So the little picture I have there on the bottom, I picked, this was actually from an intervention study I did in a child care center, because I want to really make it very clear that when we talk about parents and children in the same household, we assume they're sitting at the same table at mealtime. We assume there's some interaction going on, there's some verbal and nonverbal cues that are being exchanged. This is an area that's entirely understudied. We just heard from Barbara's presentation, this question of are you having meals together and so on is coming up, and there's a whole number of covariates affecting whether parents and children or other adults in the household and children even have meals together. So here's my plea for more research. The methods I used are unfortunately all conducted in a fairly old data set. It's the CSFIA, the Continuing Survey of Food Intake in Individuals, from 1994 through 1996. There are newer nationally representative data sets out there. However, they do not have person identifiers or several individuals in the same household, so we could see the relationship between parents or other adults in the household and the children in the household. So unfortunately, I had to use a data set that's very old. We looked at male and female children in that household. We looked at the person that was identified as the head of household. So the survey respondent was asked, who's the leader in the household? Who plays the main role? Who's the female with that role, and who's the male with that role? And that person is then the head of household. We do not know the biological relationships between the head of household and the children, but we assume, or we hope, it might be the father and the mother. which may not be true. It could be an uncle, could be, you know, a cousin. It doesn't really matter. We were after the role model, male-female role model for children. We randomly selected one child from households with more than one children out of a total of 1,721 households, and we stratified by age group. So we have the preschoolers, the school-age children, and then the teenagers. And those three age groups are very commonly picked because they have very distinct eating behaviors, preschoolers being highly dependent on the food that is provided to them, school-age children, that's the first time when they go, woohoo, you know, school lunch, they have a little bit of freedom, and then teenagers, of course, totally different ballgame. We conducted multiple logistic regression analysis to find out whether the adults in the household meeting his or her recommended intake for food groups or nutrients would predict whether the children in the household meet the recommendation. So we're after odds ratios here. All of the statistical analysis was conducted in STATA using complex survey routines. So we have the weighing and, you know, all the good stuff that maintains the national representative character of the data. And we corrected for the covariates known to affect intake in households: age, gender, ethnicity, education, and household income. So we examined the following variables. We have total energy intake, and then the number of servings of fruits, vegetables, total grain, whole grain, milk or dairy, and meat. And this is where I have to explain a little bit about the number of servings. When the data was collected, we still had the food guide pyramid. And now, obviously, all the recommendations are expressed in the My Pyramid, which is in ounces or, you know, different units. However, there is a nice software that's a patch, so it converts the serving sizes from the old pyramid to the new pyramid. So everything is expressed in the My Pyramid serving sizes. For the nutrients, we used grams or micrograms as appropriate for total fat, saturated fat, the unsaturated fatty acids, linoleic and linolenic, protein, carbohydrates, cholesterol, dietary fiber, added sugar, iron, calcium, vitamin A, B12, C, and folate. So, for all of these nutrients, we had six diets. Each one of the three age groups, so the preschooler, school age, and teenager, with the female head of household, and then the same age groups with the male head of household. As you can imagine, my statistician was screaming out loud when I said, print out the results. It was a pack this high. So I'm only presenting a very condensed version of all this data that we got. What you see here is on the left-hand side the female head of household, and on the right-hand side is the male head of household. The circles are the preschoolers, the diamonds are the school-age children, and the squares are the teenage children. I'll just give you a moment to look at this and take it in. What you see, in essence, is that we do have positive odds ratios, and they're all above one, which means there's a positive predictive relationship between the head of household meeting the dietary intake recommendations and the child meeting the dietary intake recommendations. A lot of them cluster very closely, some of them don't, and I put little red marks behind the relationships where we have an interesting epi or statistical issue going on, because we had very few individuals meeting the dietary intake recommendations. So when you calculate an odds ratio and one of the cells that you're using is extremely small, then what happens? You have humongous, humongous statistical problems, which means, yes, we do have estimates, but the confidence intervals are so large, we can only interpret the data with extreme caution. Okay, so please do not go home thinking that the female head of household meeting the whole grain intake recommendation has an odds ratio of 16, that the school-age children will meet this recommendation. I left it up there. I was thinking about taking the data out. I left it up there so you can clearly see what the problem is for certain nutrients. Same is true for dietary fiber, certainly closely related with whole grains intake. Again, the estimates were so wide that we don't really want to get into this in our data interpretation. Now, we had the other extreme as well. If you look at the male head of households prediction for protein, iron, and folate, they almost perfectly predicted the children meeting the intake. So if the male head of household met the intake recommendations for these nutrients, there was almost 100% correlation or 100% association with the children meeting the intakes. that's great from a public health perspective, but in terms of interpreting the data, if you don't have any variation in there, again, you know, one could argue we should take it out because there's no variation in there, just say there's a perfect prediction or high association. So let's look at the other ones that actually have something to offer. Fruits, vegetables, the total grains, milk and dairy, meat, and so on. For almost all of the pyramid food groups and the nutrients we looked at, the prediction or the association, the odds ratio between the male head of household and the female head of household were about the same. So dad, stand up, because it's not the female person in the household dictating what the children are eating. The males are actually apparently just as effective or just as influential. So one example where it is slightly different is dairy intake. Female head of household did have a higher association with milk and dairy intake, especially in the female children in the household, not so much the male. Same was true for calcium. So the results showed that the odds ratios were larger than one for all of the examined nutrients and food groups, which indicates a significant positive association. Most of the odds ratios were actually fairly high, between 1.8 and 2.5. In other words, the male or female head of household meeting the dietary intake recommendations for food groups or nutrients doubled the odds of the children meeting those recommendations. The odds ratios for milk, vegetables, and calcium were higher associated with the female head of households meeting the intake recommendation, less affected by the male head of household. However, intakes for protein and iron were more affected by the male head of household meeting the intake recommendation than the females, especially by age group. In the teenagers, the odds of meeting the iron and protein intake recommendations were much higher compared to the female head of household, but also compared to the preschoolers and school-age children. So there's an age effect going on here. Dairy and whole grain food groups, like I mentioned, were so large because the proportion of household, heads of household or children, or both, meeting the recommendations were really slow. So we have these large confidence intervals. We want to interpret this with caution. Protein and iron was almost complete prediction, especially in the older children, so we don't have a very reliable odds ratio there. So in summary, male and female head of households intake significantly is associated with the children's odds of meeting the levels of intake that are recommended, and that is differentially by age. Male intake levels affect children's odds of meeting the recommendations at least as much as the female's intake, especially in older children. That wasn't so clear in this graph, but for most of these odds ratios, for the males, it's slightly higher than for the females. Looking at the table with the raw data, it comes out really clearly, but in the graphic, it doesn't show as well. So there's clearly a need for more research to examine the effect of the roles of the male head of household on dietary intake levels in children of all ages, not just the preschoolers, but also the school-age children and the teenagers. And there's also a need to look at the effect of head of households or adults in the household's dietary intake on children when there are more than one child in the household, because there might be a difference between single children households and multiple children households. And we, like I said, we only randomly selected one sample. I want to address this issue of the nutritional gatekeeper, because there has been a number of publications on this issue where the premise was that traditionally it's the women in the household who prepare the meal, they plan the meal, and they purchase the food. So what does this mean? What does our data mean? Does this mean that the male head of household is at least as influential, even if they're not the one planning the meal, preparing and purchasing? Or are they having other functions? Maybe they're more effective in modeling behavior at the table, no matter what mom buys, prepares, and serves. So, and the other question is, how many males are out there that are the nutritional gatekeeper? Maybe it's not really just dominated by moms. Maybe fathers are having just as big a role. Limitations are, of course, diets were reported by proxy in the younger kids, so the caretaker reported the diets of children 2 to 6 year olds, and then if needed, there was assistance for children older than 6 years old, and we have cross-sectional data, so we cannot really establish causal relationships here. The strength is, however, this is the first nationally representative data analysis to look at this intake issue, and we use 2 days of intake for all of the kids, so we're looking at usual intake and not just a random day here and there, and we have household data. I want to acknowledge my two collaborators on this project, Dr. Wagstaff, who is a PhD in statistics at Penn State University, and Helen Smiklos-Wright, who is also Professor Emeritus at Penn State. And this project was funded by an NIH grant. Thank you very much.